Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, Scottish Premiership and much more. Live on Sky Sports.
And you are welcome to Off the Ball Football Saturday. John Duggan here with you through until 5. In the company of Dan McDonald from the Irish Independent, Shane Keegan, the UEFA Pro Licence coach, and Mark Lawrenson will be joining us very shortly to talk about the beautiful game. 5-3-1-0-6 if you want to get in touch with any comments you might have. Remember that our coverage on Off the Ball is brought to you by Sky. All the football you love in one place across Sky Sports, BT Sports and Premier Sports. Listen on Newstalk. You can also watch us on the Off the Ball digital and social channels. For Periscope on Twitter at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook and on the OTB Sports app for iOS and Android. Search OTB Sports in your app store now if you haven't already. And we've got a result in Chelsea 7, Norwich 0. Mason Mount hat-trick, Callum Hudson-Odoi, Reece James, Ben Chilwell and a Max Aaron's own goal at Stamford Bridge to Chelsea. 22 points now, 4 points ahead of Liverpool, who play United tomorrow. Man City, who are third on 17 points, take on Brighton in the late game at 5:30. Dan, I was looking at the Chelsea team today. What, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 changes. No Lukaku, no Conte. And it just, I suppose, exposes the gulf that's there between the top and the bottom.
Yeah, look, we spoke about it briefly off air. And to be fair, the likes of Brentford have come up and, you know, they've been competitive, like the Brentford-Liverpool game. So it's not a perfect theory to say that. I still believe that, and while Norwich are particularly suffering the sharp end of it, I think the strength of the top clubs at the Premier League now, I think just the price of it is you're going to have days like that sometimes. You're going to have games like that sometimes where the gulf is so pronounced. You know, Chelsea scored early, so that's the thing, you know, and they sort of, I mean, they sort of ran riot then, really, and it was almost a sort of a non-event game. And as I said, that's you know, you have a great Premier League at the top end at the moment, but you are just going to have games occasionally like that happen, that really after 10-15 minutes, other than just enjoying the good football, if it's looking for a real fierce contest, you could sort of flick over and see what's going on in the Championship game or whatever, you know, because it was that non-event. But as you said, like, significant that Chelsea could do it without, you know, without sort of Lukaku, as you mentioned, the other players, Werner, you know, that in striking areas they were down sort of their two sort of first choices, and it's grand, you know, they're able to do it comfortably. But in a way, I don't know, can you really draw much meaning from it? Like, we know that Chelsea are a good side, but I don't think you could sort of, you're not going to get carried away and say, well, that's a real statement of intent from Chelsea, etc., etc. It's a game they would expect to win, and Norwich are just, they look like they're heading into that cycle already in October, sort of into November now, sorry, that you feel like they're going to go down already, that they're in that sort of, they're heading into that yo-yo status that some clubs, we've seen West Brom go there in recent seasons, and Norwich, when they go down, they've probably been hailed for, they haven't sort of spent crazily in the Premier League, so that when they go down, they've also
parachute payment.
It leaves them in a very strong position at Championship level. And I think what you're actually seeing in recent years is more teams going down and coming back up. Like the Championship, even this season, it does look like, you know, with the exception of Sheffield United, have actually started quite sluggishly. You know, West Brom and Fulham are going to be up there, and Bournemouth, okay, they didn't get up last season, but they're still in a reasonably good financial position. They're able to get Scott Parker. We've seen last year with Watford coming straight back up, Norwich, that I think there's obviously issues there that I think are beginning to set in. And Norwich, I don't know, will they eventually get to the point where impatience kicks in? But you feel like that doesn't seem to be the model of the club. But as a result, it's going to be tough for them to stay up.
And Mbami Dele came on in the second half.
He did, yeah. I mean, it is sort of, the for a teenage defender, I guess, to pitch a scenario to them and say, you're coming on 5-0 down away to Chelsea and you're with 10 men. I mean, it's not exactly the nicest scenario, but I think really, as much as a player put in front of the camera will say it's never nice to see a teammate sent off, the fact that Ben Gibson was sent off, got a second yellow card, it means he'll have a suspension to serve, and Omar Bamadeli should get his chance. They switched Kazak, I think, to the left of the back three, and Omar Bamadeli was on the right side. So if they stick with the same system, I think they play Leeds next week, and you know, they have changed their system at times. They haven't played that formation in every game, but you would like to hope, from his perspective, it's a good chance to come in and play. He did fine in his time at the pitch. as much as you can in that scenario. Yeah.
Mason Mount hat-trick, Shane Keegan and Hudson-Odoi. He put it up to him before the game, Tuchel, and he, I suppose, paid it back with a goal. It's good that Chelsea can do that without Lukaku and Conte. I felt they haven't been at their brilliant self in recent weeks, but a couple of confidence-boosting wins now. They went to Brentford and got a result, and now they've beaten Norwich now.
Yeah, they haven't been at their best probably, you know, since the City defeat, and yet they've still managed to win the games. So, like, you know, Dan is kind of like, this is an eye-catching result, and people will want to jump to conclusions, as people tend to want to do after an eye-catching result. But like, it didn't, it, exactly as Dan, it hasn't taught us anything that we didn't really, really know. Like, are Chelsea, do we now think Chelsea stand a better chance of winning the Premier League just because they bet Norwich 7-0? Absolutely not. Norwich, you know, are we writing off their chances because they were hammered? Possibly, but I don't know if you've too many people wouldn't. I think a lot of people would have been writing off their chances anyway. Like, they do look out of their depth this year, and did before today's game. Norwich have got a big decision to make there in terms of, do they stay with the manager? I mean, he only signed a new 4-year deal, I think, in the summer, didn't he? So, like, they almost have to just make the decision, okay, yeah, we're probably going to go down. Let's make a decision now as to whether we're willing to go down with this manager and let him have a crack at it again. Or do we sack him and pay out massive compensation and then hope that some other manager can come in and keep us up? I would be amazed if any manager can come in and turn around Norwich's season, to be honest. They've looked way out of their depth already long before today happened. But what it did show on the Norwich, yeah, was just what you've touched on there, Jedi, is the strength in depth is incredible. I mean, let's be honest, is there a player in the Norwich team who'd get anywhere close to making the Chelsea squad? I wouldn't think anywhere close, really, to be honest with you. And they've not only have they got, you know, the phrase two players for every position, but they've got two serious, like, they definitely seem to have the two best wing backs in the Premier League at the moment. Chilwell starts, he goes to town.
Three games in a row he scored as well, bizarrely.
Yeah, for a fella who couldn't get a game, and understandably couldn't get a game, Chidi, because Alonso had been fantastic. Like, Alonso was absolutely ripping it up and scoring and assisting every week himself and playing superbly well. So naturally enough, Chilwell couldn't. And you were starting to think, Jesus, there's Chilwell. Chilwell's a fella who might be looking for a move in January, kind of a thing, if he's going to see any game time again. And then, I don't know why the manager, I don't think Alonso picked up an injury or anything. He just decided, okay, Chilwell's been kicking his heels on the bench long enough, he probably deserves a game here. And then he goes and plays so well that he can't be dropped then at that stage. But that applies in so many positions for them. Like, they seem to just bounce between Kovacic. Kovacic is extremely underrated, Eddie. He's very, very good. He really has impressed me an awful, awful lot since he came into the Premier League. But they seem to be able to just bounce between him and Kante in any given week. Jorginho seems to be the only one that's a regular starter there. And even at the back, like, the amount of options they have in right wing back, in the centre roles, it's just an embarrassment of riches for them at the moment. It really, really is, and that's why they are looking so strong for a real, real title challenge this year. There's no, you know, who would you have said if you looked at the Chelsea team and said, okay, if he gets a long term injury, they might struggle. Who's the he you would have pointed at? The he you would have pointed at is Lukaku. Okay, so they're off to a good start with him out. Again, it's only Norwich. You can't jump to massive conclusions. But they do certainly seem a very strong, strong panel, that's for sure.
Everton won Watford 0 in the Premier League. Goal by Tom Davies at Goodison Park. So 1-0 to the Toffees. Also, Heechan Wang has scored for Wolves away to Leeds. 1-0. Leeds are struggling. Leeds are really struggling at the moment in the Premier League. Mark Lawrenson, welcome. Good afternoon. And thanks for joining us on OTB Saturday. I just don't understand how Brentford can do it and they can swim, Mark, and Norwich can't.
Yeah, very well. They've got much better players. I think that's the first thing. And I think as well is every start of the pre-season for Norwich when they're in the Premier League, they're almost telling the players and the supporters that, look, doesn't really matter if we get relegated because we have this plan where, excuse me, we either need to be a top six in the championship or a bottom six in the Premier League. And I think once you start telling players that it doesn't really matter, well, you know, you get one or two performances where it's obviously don't really matter. But I have to say, looking at them defensively, I think the, not just today because they've been done seven, they look very, very, very average at best. And they've got, I think they've got, you know, centre-back championship defenders in the Premier League. They've obviously sold, you know, Buendia, et cetera. And I just think it's almost like they're saying, it's typical saying, you know what, we do absolutely brilliant to get in the Premier League. And if we only have 1 year, we come back, we get the parachute money, we build the team up again, and we go for promotion. But I think today, obviously, I think that will stop. And I was just listening to the radio. I've just been in Manchester. I was listening to the radio, and one or two Norwich fans were actually saying, as much as they like the club and they like what they've been doing, actually now it's starting to get a little bit embarrassing. And you know what happens when that happens, and that, you know, it'll get through to the board, you know, shall we do? Shall we risk it? Shall we give him another month? All those kind of things.
Team 33. I would personally love to see a manager like Steve Bruce, a manager like Sam Allardyce take over a club that are the richest club by a mile in the world and see what they do. Live every Friday night on OTV Sports Radio. Download the podcast now in the OTV Sports app.
Omar Bamidele and Ada's future then is definitely interesting from an Irish point of view. Arsenal confidence booster last night. They were very dominant against Aston Villa. Mark, a good performance from Lacazette, and then we had Chelsea winning comfortably today. So what's your takeaway from those two games?
Arsenal is just Arsenal are what they are. I mean, you know, drew at home last minute goal against Crystal Palace after being on a good run. It's just Arsenal, John. They're not consistent, and I still think they've lost their identity. And then the younger players for me are the better players more often than not. The manager's obviously still very much learning about his whole squad, etc. I don't see them getting anywhere near the top four. And if that's acceptable for the owner, well, it's acceptable, I suppose, as long as he gets his return from his shares. And his shares might go up a little bit, then he's not going to do anything about it, is he?
And Chelsea today, Mason Mount hat-trick?
Yeah, well, listen, I just, you know, you did wonder, didn't you? Because obviously no Lukaku, and you just thought, well, what if there might be a little bit of a knock-on effect? But well done to Mason Mount. I think I just saw an article from him, I don't know if it was yesterday or even in this morning's paper, saying he needs to start scoring more. Well, he's obviously got that right, although he missed the pen, didn't he, the first time. So, look, I don't know which one of the boys was talking about them before, but they have got two players for every single position. They have got the best squad in the Premier League. I don't think there's any argument about that whatsoever. But they've got a squad in the Premier League where, you know, they've got two players for every position. Manchester United probably have more sometimes for every position, but they don't have two in crucial areas, shall we say.
53106 for the text. Please tell Laro he was funny on Football Focus today, says Colin Galway. I don't know what that refers to, Laro.
Well, a couple of things, but one of them, Dion Dublin was talking about when he broke his neck playing for Aston Villa, and I just said, well, you never looked back, did you?
Your humour is unique. That's all I can say, Mark.
That's not saying a lot, John, but obviously I'll take it.
Mick McCarthy, your old sparring partner with Ireland, your old teammate. What, 8 championship defeats in a row now? 2-0 defeat at home to Middlesbrough today with Cardiff.
Is it 8? I thought it was 7. Is it 8?
Yeah, I believe it's 8. Place above the drop zone. But anyway, whether it's 7 or 8, it could be curtains from now.
Yeah, I think so. I was speaking to, do you know Jason Mohammed, who works for BBC and Radio 2 and stuff like that. He's a massive Cardiff fan. He goes to nearly every single game that he possibly can go to. And I just met him in the BBC today and I said, what's the story? And he just went, look, he said, we have one player who's quite gifted on the ball, who's on loan from Wolves. And he said, the rest are unbelievably average. And Mick's not bought most of them. He said, since we had Warnock and then... it was the boy they got from Millwall that was the manager that played for Millwall.
Neil Harris.
Yeah. He said, we've just got really ordinary players. And he said, you know, he probably will get sacked. But then he said, well, where do we go and who do we get and all those kind of things. But you see, so if you then think, okay, that's a fair point. But then you look at Nottingham Forest and obviously Chrissy Hooton lost his job and Steve Cooper's come in. And they look a completely different team. And I know you always get a bounce at first, but they just look not just the results that they've had, but they're playing different football. And he's basically transformed them. I don't know, half a dozen games or something. So it's mad, isn't it? It really is mad. But what that does is to owners and chief executives goes, you know, a change is good, change is the right time. I think that'll happen to Mick. I'm not saying he won't be bothered. Of course he'll be bothered because, you know, he's very proud of his record in terms of managing. But he's probably coming to the stage now where he thinks, do I actually need it? And I think the answer will be probably no, both from him and his missus.
Southampton 0, Burnley 1, Maxwell for Burnley. And it's now Everton 1, Watford 1, Josh King equalising for Watford at Goodison Park. It's a bit like Steve Bruce, isn't it? He was talking about his missus during the week and whether he's really up for this anymore.
Yeah, well, I think, like, I mean, the Mick McCarthy situation, I mean, like, you know, you're in trouble last week when you had that very bizarre story for the Swansea game where the CEO was on the bus with some fans and sort of making some joke about, you know, he wishes he had a new manager. You know, yeah, this is a story last week. We'd have seen it. Ken Chu, the CEO, and, like, he was obviously, you know, something that was recorded and a bit of, as they say, a bit of banter, you know. And, like, when he subsequently came out and didn't deny that this happened, but that it was just sort of a joke, then you know you're in a bit of bother. And, like, in fairness to Mick, like, Mick wasn't wanted by Cardiff fans initially, but it was sort of that closed doors era. Went in and did extremely well at first. Like, he did a great job. He got that sort of bounce at the start, and then, yeah, it seems to have gone very stale, and it does seem to be only going one way. But I know what you're saying about Steve Bruce. Like, you know, there's sort of, and I'm not sure, like, the grief Mick is getting is on the same scale. I mean, I don't know, maybe locally, maybe it is bad in the stadium, but obviously the Steve Bruce one has become very, very public. And, you know, he's speaking this week as sort of an extraordinary interview.
Well, I quote it. Yeah, it's in the Telegraph. Quote, yeah. It's not just about me. It's taken its toll on my whole family because they're all Geordies. I can't ignore that. By the time I got to Newcastle, I thought I could have handled everything thrown at me, but it's been very, very tough to never really be wanted, to feel people wanted me to fail, to feel and read that people are constantly saying I would fail, that I was useless, a fat waste of space, a stupid, tactically inept cabbage head or whatever. And it's from day one.
Yeah, I mean, it's vicious. And I think, like, there's probably parallels. Like, people like Steve Bruce and Mick, I mean, they get jobs, they've got loads of jobs, you know, and they're probably, as a result of that, they're never going to be new and exciting in any club that they're hired by. It's generally like, oh really, you know, and that's, you know, that's the reaction that accompanies them, and it means that they have to do exceptionally well to avoid that, like exceptionally well. And now, I'm not defending Bruce's record at Newcastle. It does appear from people who've been covering the club on the ground that there's been a lot of mistakes made, and you know, there's obviously conflicting views around how much of that was related to, again, the squad, the Ashley era, and so on. But it's funny what Laura says there about, you know, Mick, you know, at what point do you not want this anymore? I actually remember a couple of years back with Ireland, we were in the Algarve for like a end of season training camp, and there actually was a night organised where Mick and the staff and a couple of the media,
a barbecue, like Saipan.
Well, it wasn't quite a barbecue. It's a couple of drinks in a place, but it just so happened that Steve Bruce was there, clearly out on holidays at the same time. And someone said they saw Mick and Steve Bruce having a chat, and they were like, how many clubs do you think they've managed between them? And they were starting, you know, trying to go through them all. But, like, I'm sure, like, Laurel would know, like, as someone had a time in management yourself, like, there's people who reach a point where they step away from it, and they don't want that hassle anymore. But clearly, like, there's a degree of an addiction there with them that they keep going back for more. I mean, I'm not sure what Steve Bruce's longest break is since he stopped playing, but I think Mick's is something like 7 or 8 months. I think that's the longest he's been out of work, which is an incredible sort of run if you're going back to, what, 1992, 1993 in management, which everyone says is the most demanding job of them all. So I don't know what you make of that, Laura, that sort of staying power.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, generally now they've become managers who kind of go into clubs and put the fire out a little bit. And I think with that, you probably don't get as long as you would normally get. I mean, just listening to John before then saying about the chief executive officer at Cardiff going on the bus with the supporters. Do you know what? That's an absolute load of rubbish. He's only going on the bus with the supporters to make himself more important. So when he walks off and he answers all the questions, they go, oh, he's great, he's fab and all that. I mean, I bet I can just imagine what Mick said when when we heard of that, and I think it would be two short letters, but they had three F's in them. And I mean, you know, I don't really get that, but that's the way that football's gone, isn't it? But I mean, I'm a big fan of both of them because I think they're just honest guys, open guys, who obviously, you know, come in, work extremely hard. Steve Bruce as well. What I don't get about Newcastle, and I get quite a lot of aggravation from them because I just, one or two things that I said, I just said they expect to be in the Champions League every year and all that kind of stuff, which was probably a bit wrong, but there you go.
Well, you're wearing your Newcastle colours today, Mark, as well, interestingly.
I am indeed, not for any other reason, but I just rushed upstairs and got changed. First thing I saw, John. But I think you know, it's like, what didn't Newcastle fans get about Mike Ashley? You know, basically, he's a businessman. He's not really interested in football. He's supposed to be a Tottenham fan. I don't know. I really don't know who he supports. But what didn't they get about that? I don't get that. You know, he came in to make money and he stayed in the division. And what was his net spend? Did I read 19 million, 1-9, somewhere? That was his net spend. So he's done brilliantly from it. And I know they're all going mad every week and that, Steve Bruce this and Steve Bruce that. Steve Bruce was working for the owner, ostensibly. Yes, he'd like to have been more popular with the supporters. But he's working for the owner. And he was never, ever, ever in all his time there, ever under any pressure from the manager, from the owner, apart to say, make sure we stay in the league. So, you know, and I get this massive excitement with them all at the moment. And I said something today where I said, look, you know what? Attracting players is difficult. If you've got money, it helps. But then I said, you know, lots of the wives and girlfriends of top players who get offered the chance to go and play up north, they don't want their husbands and their boyfriends to go because they want to be in London. And of course, then they're saying, oh, well, you can get a plane down there in an hour and all that kind of stuff. It's true. It's absolutely true, this. And then they chucked Ginola at me, Rob Lee, who's from London, at me. Who else? There was Tino Espria. Well, I'm sorry, Tino didn't last very long, did he? In fact, he wasn't even married, so that wasn't even part of it. And Ginola didn't stay there too long either. So it's just, that will be one of their biggest problems at Newcastle, is actually attracting the right players. And I'm of the opinion that the fella at the moment, is it Graham Jones?
Yeah.
If he gets a couple of decent results, I'd be asking him to hang around and keep him in the league and then look to next season and start again.
Yeah, there's something that nobody deserves abuse, and that's completely unacceptable. But you do have to have a bit of a rhino skin in this crazy game. He's got an 8 million payoff.
Oh, well,
8 million. Like, he's won the lottery. Well, he's not even won a normal lottery. He's won an astronomical lottery.
But has he got 8 million, John? I mean, I think the 8 million covers everybody who's going. I may be totally wrong. But also, I mean, the thing about that might be related to keeping them in the division, because he wasn't on big money. I remember he took the job. I had a conversation with him a while ago, and he said, I've not taken this job for big money, but obviously I'm on a big bonus to keep him in the league. So what does that tell you? You know, and the supporters they just think, oh, he's on this, he's getting this, and what, and it's never ever black and white. Sometimes it's grey, isn't it? In fact, probably most of the time it's grey.
But I think Joe, John, like, you're right that it is the nature of the game, though, as well.
You like politics, you got to take it.
You do. I mean, listen, managers, you know, like Mick McCarthy, like, a lot of sympathy for him leaving.
He signed a new deal in March.
But Mick McCarthy was a lot of sympathy for him, obviously, having to step aside for Stephen Kenny. He's still got a significant figure to leave, you know what I mean? Which would be more than Stephen Kenny's salary over that time. You know, went up well in Nicosia. I'm sure he gets a deal there. But like, that is the game. I mean, to be fair, like, you know, if someone gives you a contract, you sign the contract.
Yeah.
You know? Don't really have an issue with that. You know, and also as well, there's that grey area between, you know, being wealthy doesn't mean that you're sort of insulated from abuse. You know what I mean? And like, the Steve Bruce comments
correct,
are obviously
yes, correct.
Like, you know, very, very serious and personal comments, you know, and I'm sure he's, you know, financially set up, of course, but still, it's still hurtful. You can see that in his comments.
Wise,
but I mean, Shane Keegan's there. Right. I mean, Shane, obviously at a sort of a lower level, but you know the life of the manager. You must sort of admire the guys who are still doing it, what, after 25 years of it.
Absolutely. Look, it's there's no doubt, lads. It's a profession that should come with a with a mental health warning, with some sort of a risk attached warning. It's just not a healthy lifestyle. Like, okay, we're talking about the abuse that you take from the supporters and that kind of thing, and obviously Steve Bruce seems to have had it worse than most. I would count myself reasonably lucky in that side of it. You know, I was kind of, if I look at the Galway, when I was at Galway, the year we went down, because we went down quite narrowly and went down winning a lot of games towards the end, the supporters were broadly still behind us when we went down. The bit of abuse I would have took would have been the following season when we were kind of failing to bounce straight back. But to be honest with you, look, obviously in the League of Ireland, it's going to be on a smaller scale anyway. And then, you know, it wasn't overly bad. It wasn't overly bad. But that's no great comfort to you, because it's the battering you do to yourself inside your own head is what I found the toughest. Like, you're constantly questioning yourself, what am I doing differently? Why? How come this? I used to do it this way and that worked. I'm still doing it this way and now it's not working. Why is it not working all of a sudden? Okay, can we do this differently? Can we do that differently? You start to question everything about yourself. You start to question everything about you as a manager, you as a person, all that kind of stuff. And you do give yourself a real, real mental battering. And obviously enough, it takes over all aspects of your life. As much and all as you'll try not to. I mean, I think I might have said before, you know, I would have had a conversation shortly after leaving Galway where my wife Roisin would have used the phrase that she would have said that I was very good at fake smiling the day after a game, because we had a small boy at home, we had Connor at home, and you couldn't go around with a mopey face and you all day the day after a game because you'd lost the night before. So that ruined the young fella's, you know, childhood, so it would. So, but she said there was a massive, massive difference between me being fake happy and me being genuinely happy. I can get where she's coming from there. You have to force it and try and push it to the back of your head. So you're doing that. As I say, that's tough, tough going. I suppose two things that were thrown out at GJD on it is, when I got offered the opportunity to go full-time at Wexford, so we had the league title wrapped up and we just happened to have Dundalk in a cup game. And myself and Stephen were talking after the game. Mick always has the spaghetti bolognese upstairs for the away team. And we're chatting away. Yeah. And we're chatting away. And I said to Stephen, Stephen says, what's your hopes for next year? And I kind of said to Stephen, well, look, Mick's offered me the opportunity to go full time. This is Mick Wallace. Mick's offered me the opportunity to go full time. So I'm going to have a bash at it full time. I'm leaving the day job to give it a go. And in my head, this was my dream scenario. I'm about to become a full time manager. This is what I want. This is what I've worked so hard for. And Stephen looked at me and said, what? I said, yeah. He said, you're going to leave a full time job to have a go at this? And I said, yeah. And he says, I won't say he tried to talk me out of it, but he did kind of give me a few home truths and kind of let me know, okay, do you realise what you're letting yourself in for, kind of a thing here. And
this was Stephen, you know, Kenny, right? This was Stephen Kenny.
Stephen Kenny, yeah. Because, like, Stephen had been how many years in management by that stage? Jesus, an incredible amount already, even though that's quite a while ago. And obviously he knew the tough bits and he'd been through the ringer on it and the whole lot and how it can affect family life and all that. So it's very, very tough. And then to compound that, JD, I don't know if any of you got a chance to read it. Michael Calvin had a book, Living on the Volcano.
Yeah.
Where he does a chapter with various different managers. And there's a lot of, it's a brilliant book. Now again, it should come with a health warning. It really made me think whether I'd made the right move reading it. But some of the stories in that, I just can't believe that there isn't more of a whole thing around mental health issues in management, really, to be honest with you, because it's some of the stories you hear in that. The one that sticks with me mainly, maybe it's just because he's Irish, but one of the chapters was on Joe Dunn,
yeah.
Who I think at the time might have been at Colchester, or he was somewhere anyway, Dan might know.
Yeah, and Colchester, yeah.
Yeah, and he was telling the story, John, where they were going through a tough run. They were going through a tough run, and he knew he was under pressure and the whole lot. But because he was struggling with family time, he actually found a good way to try and get around that. Was he actually was bringing his son to the training ground a lot and to matches and that a lot and that kind of thing. So on this particular day, they were after losing the game, and after the game, you know, he's kind of going, right, I'm in bother here. And the next thing, a knock comes on the door and somebody says to him, listen, the chairman just wants to see you up in the office. So he turns around and he throws the car keys to his son, tells his son to go ahead and get into the car because he didn't want his son to be around for it, obviously. So he goes into the chairman's office, chairman gives him the bullet and the whole lot, comes down, gets into the car, goes to sit into the car, and the son's in the car, bawling his eyes out. And he says, "What's wrong with you?" He says, "It's just been on the radio that you're after getting sacked."
Oh my God! Oh.
You know, and you're like, "Oh, I'm reading that," or any manager's reading that, and you know they've probably got kids themselves and the whole lot. And it's, but look, that's it. Dan used the word at the very start. It is an addiction. I'm throwing out all these stories at you, and do I want to get back in and have another crack at it? Yep.
Mark Lawrence, you know a lot of managers in football over the years. Yeah. How do they manage to keep doing this?
Well, the money helps, John, if you're at the top. And, you know, the other thing now with these guys as well, when they sign a contract, they actually have a discussion with whether it's the chief exec or the owner, whoever, which is, if you decide to sack me, how much will my compensation be? So that kind of softens the blow a little bit. It's a drug to them. It gives them a reason to wake up in the morning, gives them obviously a reason to go training and all those kind of things. And I reckon if you said now, I mean, Kenny lives around the corner from me in Southport, and if you said to him, "Would you fancy another go?" He'd probably go, "Not really." But I kind of think, you know what, if it was the right club, he would. Because, you know, as a boy, it's a drug. It really seriously is a drug. And once you get a new job, you forget everything that ever happened in your old job. And you know, it's something that's always been in their lives. They like the highs, obviously don't like the lows, but they come with the highs, as we know. And sometimes actually you can work for some really, really good people. And as long as those good people are very honest with you, that ain't an issue. I mean, Preston, we sacked our manager, well, last year, the boy from Norwich.
Alex Neil, yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you remember him because I can't now. He got £1.6 million payoff. So, you know, that's not a bad way to like it, is it?
No, we're not going to get that here, unfortunately, on OTB Football Saturday. We're doing it for the love of it. We're doing it for the love of it here on News Talk. Cool. We got to take a break. The scores in the Premier League: Chelsea 7, Norwich 0 full-time. Crystal Palace 0, Newcastle 0 is the latest. Everton 1, Watford 1. It is Leeds who are struggling 0, Wolves 1. So Wolves leading that one. Southampton 0, Burnley 1. Half 5 kick-off, Brighton against Manchester City. In the Championship, it finished another defeat for Mick McCarthy. Cardiff 0, Middlesbrough 2. Birmingham 0, Swansea 0 is the latest. It is Blackburn 0, Reading 0. It is Blackpool 1, Preston 0. Bournemouth lead Huddersfield by 2-0. Coventry 1, Derby 0 is the latest. It is Luton 1, Hull 0. Millwall 0, Stoke 1. Peterborough 0, QPR 0. And West Brom 1, Bristol City 0. And in Scotland, in the Premiership, Celtic 0, St Johnstone 0. Aberdeen 1, Hibs 0. It is Dundee United 0, Motherwell 0. Hearts 0, Dundee 0. And it's Ross County 1, Livingston 1. 53106, your text. Going to look ahead to Man U v Liverpool tomorrow on Off the Ball Saturday after this.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, Scottish Premiership and much more. Live on Sky Sports.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you 3 to 5 in the company of the former Republic of Ireland and Liverpool defender Mark Lawrence and the football correspondent of the Irish Independent Dan McDonnell and the UEFA Pro Licence coach Shane Keegan to talk about the beautiful game. You can text us 53106, tweet us at Off the Ball, listen on News Talk and watch us on our digital and social streams for Periscope on Twitter at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook and on the OTB Sports app. Remember our coverage on Off the Ball brought to you by Sky, all the football you love in one place across Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sports. If you missed the breaking news earlier on today in Gaelic Games, the proposal to make the GAA Football League Championship a reality next year has failed. It did not garner the 60% of delegate votes required at a special congress at Croke Park. The vote was taking place and 50% of delegates, 50.6%, so nearly 51% voted for it, 49.4% voted against. So the motion was not carried. So 2022, what are we going to have? The status quo. Provincial championships in football, knockout qualifiers through the back door, no Super 8s, and there will be a secondary Tailteann Cup for teams that don't make the primary All-Ireland series. There is another congress at February for the GAA.
We actually do have some news.
It's not Congress news.
Not Congress related news, no. But Cardiff City Football Club can confirm that first team manager Mick McCarthy and assistant manager Terry Connor have left the club by mutual agreement and with immediate effect. So there we go. Off the back of a previous discussion 8 minutes ago, thanking Mick and Terry for their efforts during their times with the Bluebirds and wishing them all the best for their statement, for the future. It's a 3-paragraph statement. So there you go.
Mark Lawrence and Mick McCarthy, not a surprise, I suppose, with the free fall in the Championship.
Yeah, no, you know what? He'll be grateful because he wouldn't have wanted to have to wait overnight for the call in the morning, you know, 11:30 in the morning from the chief exec, whoever it is, to say, thanks, Mick, but no, thanks, Mick. Well done to the football club. They've made the decision. He'll be upset because obviously he wanted to make the best of the job. I don't think he'll be upset for too long, to be honest with you, boys.
Back on the bike.
Back on the bike, yep.
Shane, we were just talking about this just before the break, the perils of management.
That's it, 100%, yeah. And you'd wonder, JD, like, you know, so often I've been on both sides of it. So often when a club pulls the trigger like this, it would be amazing if they hadn't made the decision before the game. I'd be very, very surprised if they just lost the game and then made that decision. I would think they had already made the decision before the game kicked off, and I would think they have had preliminary talks with 2 or 3 candidates before that game kicked off. As I say, I'm not sure if that happened when I was in position, but I have been contacted about positions where a manager is in place, and he's heading into a game at the weekend, and doesn't matter whether he wins or loses, he's gone, and he just doesn't know it yet, you know. Yeah.
Millwall, the Republic of Ireland twice, Sunderland, Wolves, Ipswich, Apoel, and Cardiff City. Mick McCarthy on the lookout for a new position after he's probably taken a break. So we wish him well. Another man who is always, I suppose, facing the sort of Damocles is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Man United, you got to love the chaos and the entertainment, but I can't really get my head around it, to be honest, because I don't know what United I'm going to see tomorrow.
Oh, are you talking to me? Sorry.
Yeah, Mark, yeah.
All right, okay. Well, nobody is, including the manager. But I'll tell you something. Klopp's only won there once in 7 games in the Premier League. So, and it's we know it's a tough fixture for the obvious reasons, 35 miles separating them and they hate each other. The problem is he's got outstanding players, Ollie. He's basically, we don't really know from one week to the next how he's playing, how he's set up to play. Well, we know he's set up to play, but it's so different. He can't seem to make his mind up exactly what he wants from the team. Then, of course, now they say, well, Ronaldo doesn't chase back. Nobody scores in nearly every flipping game that he plays for. So why don't you pick a team that makes up for Ronaldo's deficiency and not pressing, you know, and all those kind of things. And I just get the feeling, I don't really know. I met him a couple of times, Ollie, but I don't really know him. I just get the feeling he's trying to please everybody. And as we know, and the boys will know, is it's hopeless because you just cannot do that. He's got to look at what he's got. I mean, if you watch the Atalanta game the other night, all of a sudden Mike Phelan appeared from nowhere and had a quick word with Ollie, and they changed it and they got an extremely good result and an outstanding second half performance. But you're kind of thinking, well, you know, what exactly is happening there? Obviously he's got Mike Phelan for that experience and stuff, but he's managed lots and lots of games now, and a lot of these players in his team are his players. So he knows what he's signed, not just in terms of ability, but also mentally and all those kind of things. And there doesn't seem any functionality to the team. Atalanta had quite a few chances in the first half. They could easily have been 3 or 4 up, and they were missing 3 or 4 players, by the way, as well.
Yeah, and they also played 2-3. John Giles was saying during the week to Nathan that there's no fear there. There's no fear factor. So if you had a Conte in there or Simeone in there, there'd be a fear. Is that the case? And, you know, when you played for managers, Mark, was the fear factor important?
The fear factor obviously is the players you're playing against, isn't it? It's not, you know, the opposition manager. And Liverpool had a great time at Brighton. We got, I think, 2 promotions in 3 or 4 years, and so that was all good. Alan Mulder was the manager. I mean, he'd go absolutely nuts. But you know what, after a while, John, You don't listen. I mean, I was telling the story yesterday. I did this thing in London. I was telling a story yesterday that he threatened, Muller's threatened to run us all over one day in his brand new Rover. And you know what I mean? And it was funny. It obviously wasn't meant to be, but it was really, really funny. But he would just, he had this temper on him and he was like, wow. It was like Vesuvius erupting and stuff like that. But Liverpool were completely different because you were under pressure from the supporters. Wasn't so much the manager or, you know, the famed boot room boys and everything. It was from the supporters. And at the very least, you tried 101%. And if you weren't particularly good enough or they thought in their own eyes that you weren't particularly good enough, they'd still look after you. Alan Kennedy, to, you know, winning goals, European Cup finals, etc., wasn't that good a player. He really wasn't. But, you know, we had all so many different players in the team who could kind of look after him and help him. I mean, he played alongside Hansen, and Hansen just babysat him for the most of his career when he was there. But the fear factor was losing games. Really seriously was. I mean, I remember spells where we're at home, 20 minutes maybe, and we hadn't scored, and there'd be this murmur. And this murmur would just get louder and louder, like, oh, and all that kind of... They were unbelievable because they were used to being, like, winning games by half-time. So that's where we got it from. But the really clever managers are the ones who come in and make you think about yourself and what you do in the team, etc. Joe Fagan was the cleverest. Joe came in on a couple of occasions, A, when he was chief coach, and B, when he was manager, and he'd come in and he had everybody in the room, and, you know, Joe didn't speak very loud. And in fact, when he spoke to you, you had to almost like get up close to him to hear what he was saying. And I think that was a very clever ploy. And I don't think that was for the only reason that you had to listen. I remember him coming in one day and all he said to us were, there are some players in this team not doing it. They know who they are. See you tomorrow, and cleared off out. And you know what you do? You ask yourself the question, does he mean me? And even if you thought you played really, really well, maybe you might have made one mistake, you think, does he mean me because I did this? And I just think that was one of the cleverest things ever. And if you've got good, honest players as well, that doesn't take a lot of working out.
I just look at the sense the United supporters are putting Solskjaer under pressure at all. I think they still revere him as this club legend. And
I think the problem is you have a second half like you have against Atalanta, and everybody goes home absolutely going, wow, you know, how good was that? Unfortunately, they tend to forget about the first sort of half and stuff. But it's like, I remember, you remember Sir Stanley Matthews, yeah, and Sir Tom Finney?
Yeah.
And I remember speaking to Jimmy Armfield, God rest all three of them as well, talking to Jimmy Armfield. And Jimmy was a massive fan of both and played with Stanley Matthews at Blackpool. But Jimmy would say, Stanley Matthews is really, really clever. He said, you wouldn't see him for a large part of the game, but in the last 20 minutes, he just seemed to come alive, whether it was because fullbacks were tiring and they couldn't catch him or whatever. And he said, everybody would go home thinking, wow, Stanley Matthews, unbelievable. What a performance. And he said, so Tom Finney was the complete, well, not the complete opposite. He just said he was the complete player because Jimmy absolutely adored him and everything, stuff like that. He said, that's how sometimes, you know, not so much that you're con supporters or whatever, but they have this thing where they all go home happy because, you know, Stanley Matthews jogged away from the fullback, put a great crossing in the 82nd minute and they win the game. And It's different from all sorts of angles, isn't it?
He can't chain play all of his attacking players tomorrow, Ollie, can he?
I really don't think so. But I do understand he's in an awful catch-22, like with Pogba, because if Paul Pogba plays in four big games, JD, he may well be the difference and be the reason that you manage to win two of those games. And is highly likely to be the reason and the difference why you lost the other two of those games. Like, it's an awful position to be in. When you don't put them in the team, they look like they have no creativity whatsoever from that central area. When you do put them in the team, you might solve that problem, but they just look so open. It's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I've rarely seen a player come so second best as he did against Tielemans last week for Leicester. Tielemans absolutely destroyed him. And Tielemans is a very, very good player, but I don't know if I'd put him in that world-class bracket, and yet he killed Pogba last week. So a lot of the talk is understandably around Ronaldo and the system because of Ronaldo. I think the bigger question marks are around Pogba. What the hell they do with him to try and get the most out of him while alleviating the issues that he causes the team. I'm just not 100% sure. I think it's going to be a fascinating tactical battle. The Liverpool side during the week really, really surprised me in terms of how they set up. So I don't know whether that was an effort to try and... I mean, it would seem amazing that you'd be resting players against Atletico Madrid in a big game like that. But it'll be interesting to see how both sides go about it, particularly though United. It's just so hard to get that team right. I don't know what way you go about it.
Okay, got to take a break. We're going to be back with more Liverpool Man U preview material with Mark, Shane and Dan after four. Let's give you the half times in the Premier League. Crystal Palace 0, Newcastle 0, Everton 1, Watford 1, Leeds 0, Wolves 1 and Southampton 1, Burnley 1 as a half time. Chelsea beat Norwich 7-0 earlier on. And Mick McCarthy's been sacked as manager of Cardiff City today after they slumped to their, I think it was 8th successive defeat to Middlesbrough, 2-0 defeat in the Championship. And we're going to bring the halftime scores from Scotland and the rest of the Championship after the news. 53106, your text messages. You can join us on Off the Ball Saturday after that.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, Scottish Premiership and much more live on Sky Sports.
You are welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to five. Remember, our football coverage on Off the Ball brought to you by Sky. All the football you love in one place across Sky Sports, BT Sports and Premier Sports. Joined and delighted to be by the former Republic of Ireland and Liverpool defender Mark Lawrenson, the football correspondent of the Irish Independent Dan McDonnell and the UEFA Pro Licence coach Shane Keegan to talk about the beautiful game. 53106 if you want to text us. Halftime scores in the Premier League. Let's go around the grounds. We'll start with Elland Road. Leeds are playing Wolves today and with the first half details is Adam Dury.
Huang Hee-chan's fourth goal of the Premier League season has earned Wolves a 1-0 advantage over Leeds at half-time. The goal came in the 10th minute when Huang reacted to a deflection inside the box and poked the ball in from close range. It's the only effort Wolves have had on target. Leeds have been poor, they've wasted possession and they've failed to seriously test keeper Jose Sarr, and unless they can find cohesion in their play, Wolves look straight for a fourth straight league win. Half-time at Elland Road, it's Leeds 0, Wolves 1.
It's honours even at Goodison Park between Everton and Watford with the first half details is Shane Pennington.
It's Everton 1, Watford 1, and it's been a half of two halves, if you like. Everton started well and took the lead on 3 minutes when Damari Gray did well down the left-hand side to get to the byline, and his cross was perfect for Tom Davis to slot home from 6 yards out. And Townsend missed a good chance, a 25-yard effort pushed away by Foster before Watford equalised in the 13th minute. A free kick from the right-hand side flicked on and eventually finded Josh King. He put the ball in the net. It was initially ruled out for offside, but after a VAR review, the goal was given. Then Watford grew into the game and Townsend and Sissoko both had good chances for them before it ended, of course, at half-time. Everton 1, Watford 1.
And honours even as well between Crystal Palace and Newcastle at Selhurst Park, and Mike Lawrence was there.
Crystal Palace 0, Newcastle United 0. Caretaker Newcastle manager Graham Jones shuffled his defence for his first game in charge, and they've had plenty to do in the opening 45 minutes as the home side had kept them pinned in their own half for much of the opening period, peppering balls around the 18-yard box. Christian Benteke with the best chance, clattering the post from close range. Edouard and Olise have enjoyed plenty of freedom on the flanks for Palace. Newcastle won two corners late on, but that's it really. Half-time, Crystal Palace 0, Newcastle 0.
There have been goals at St Mary's between Southampton and Burnley. Alan Lewis.
Half-time, Southampton 1, Burnley 1. A crackerjack of a first half. Maxwell Cornet with a glancing header to put Burnley ahead after 13 minutes. But Southampton responded well to going behind, but then missed a hat-trick of chances. First, Theo Walcott in acres of space with just the keeper to beat. Fires wide of goal. Then the miss of the season so far. Nathan Redmond somehow missing an open goal from 3 yards out. And then Tino Livramento hitting the post and watching as the ball rolled across the face of goal. Finally, Livramento heading home from a corner, getting the home side back on level terms. It's been fast, it's been furious. At halftime, it's Southampton 1, Burnley 1.
Now, earlier on, Chelsea extended their lead at the top of the table for a few hours at least. A 7-0 win over Norwich Mason Mount with a hat-trick at Stamford Bridge. No Lukaku today. 7 years ago, September 2014, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was sacked as manager of Cardiff. And Mick McCarthy has got the bullet today from the same owner. So tomorrow, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer managing Man United. So maybe there is a good future for Mick McCarthy and management. Been at it a long time. Dan, you and I were speaking off air about this game tomorrow, Man United and Liverpool, and whether supporter attitudes are changing. You know, if younger people are just as fanatical as their dads, possibly, about Man U and Liverpool.
Yeah, and listen, I think broadly they are. And I mean, it was interesting during the week. I don't know if you saw Gary Neville on his podcast did an interview with Jamie Carragher, but he went to Liverpool, and you can see, I mean, listen, the rivalry and the long-standing enmity between Liverpool and Manchester is such that, you know, and those two clubs, with all due respect to the other clubs in the city, are like the four, you know, are to the four of it. So I don't think, like, you know, the rivalry is going to be diminished in any sense. But we were sort of talking about a few things off air that you kind of wonder with the global beast that the Premier League is now and the new generation of Premier League fans around the world. Like in Ireland, obviously, Liverpool Manchester United is the big game for Premier League supporters, and I think it always will be. I don't see that changing. But I think maybe for more the neutral floating fan who isn't affiliated for a club, I was saying to you personally, Liverpool Man City now is the game I'm looking for. You know, if you're sort of saying I really want to see like a football match this season, if you can have a ticket and you can go to one game, it'd be Liverpool City. Now, I know it's easy to say that because, you know, a couple of weeks ago they played and it was it just seems that it's becoming like a really, I mean, the Clásico was on this weekend. And we obviously went through the phase where the Clásicos were box office. I actually met someone at the game last night who had a spare ticket for a Clásico on Sunday. They were going over and worried about there's still tickets on sale for the game over there at the time. But I just feel that Liverpool City as a game has gone to a real other level, and maybe it's because the two managers as well, and I mean the obvious reasons why that would be the case. Whereas some of the Liverpool Manchester United games in recent years have been incredibly hyped and they haven't necessarily developed. And I don't know, maybe there's people out there listening who can tell us, like, you know, is there a generation of kids now who are like supporting Man City and going down that road, or are they just following what their parents do? I kind of wonder. I'm sort of curious about that, because I think globally, just these Liverpool City games are, you know, you can't miss them now. Whereas I think with Liverpool Man United, it's like, you know, yeah, you really want to watch the game, but I'm not sure if it's on the same level if you're not really invested in the clubs.
Yeah, 53106 folks out there listening in. Are you as fanatical if you're a Liverpool United fan about this game as you were? If you've got children, boys or girls, do they support United Liverpool? Do they support Barcelona? Do they support Man City? Is the nature of football support changing? Are more youngsters potentially interested in Bohemians, Shamrock Rovers, Cork City in this country now? I would say this. I do believe that Man United and Liverpool are the biggest supported clubs in Ireland. There was an Irish Times survey on this last year. You see it through you get on a plane in normal times back from Liverpool or Manchester on a Saturday night or on a Sunday night, it's just completely red. Everybody's decked out in the jerseys. 62% in that survey either supported Liverpool or Man United. I think that is ingrained. But I do think things can change. Leeds have a big fan base in Ireland, and that's a lot from the 60s and the 70s. But I wouldn't say there are that many young Leeds supporters now.
Yeah, but I was saying to you as well, and maybe Shane's there as a sort of a young son who's into football. I think that, like, you know, sort of some youngsters now, like, do they watch the full 90-minute games? Like, that's the whole thing. Like, you know, are they interested in just watching the great players? You know, I know Nathan here a couple of weeks back just went over because there was tickets for Man City, just went to go and watch Man City play, to go and watch, like, they're not Man City fans, but they want to watch. I know, like, my nephew and stuff is like mad into just like loves players, you know, and will get jerseys for any player as opposed to, you know, not just getting into football through a fanaticism about one club. And I don't know, we're going down the road here of this, this sort of FIFA World Cup every 2 years plan of people need, like, you know, their fix of entertainment now, and they don't want to watch full 90 minute games and they want to watch I don't know. I think there's something in the broader debate, but I don't know.
Shane, is your young lad a fanatical United or Liverpool fan or another club?
Unfortunately, JD, he has followed in my footsteps. Yeah, obviously that's my fault. I don't know if I gave him much of a choice in the matter. He latched onto Harry Kane and Spurs very, very early. Now, it's funny the timing of when you say it to me. We've just booked, so we're heading over first weekend in December, where Spurs are at home to Norwich. He's all excited about it and can't wait. Now, he's only six. He's all excited all about, can't wait. I think he's about as excited to getting into the Spurs Superstore now as he is the game. And he has also, in all his excitement, has also turned around and said to me, you don't expect me to stay for the whole game, though, do you? So that kind of answers Dan's question there. I'd say if we can get 10, 15 minutes into the second half now with him, I'll be doing very, very well. I think his initial burst of enthusiasm might have died off at that stage, so it might. But I don't know what that's.
Attention spans. He will stay. That stadium is incredible. He will stay.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. Although then you have the flip side of trying to negotiate a six-year-old out of a stadium in the crowds that will be trying to leave at that stage, JD. So might be no bad thing if he's bored with 15 minutes left. But I was just, when Dan says, I was actually one of those kids growing up where I was always a Spurs supporter, but the collection of jerseys I had was ridiculous. And it was very much a case of latching on to individuals. Like I got a Middlesbrough jersey when Janinho signed for them. I got a Sheffield Wednesday jersey because I love Benito Carbone. I was like picking up ridiculously random jerseys. Newcastle, I loved that Newcastle jersey with the old grandfather collar on it. So while I was only ever a Spurs supporter, I had a ridiculous collection of jerseys just latching onto players, I suppose, as individuals. Yeah,
I was the opposite. I would Spurs home away, completely all Spurs when I was growing up. As a young lad in the late 80s, early 90s. Mark Lawrenson, is Man United, Liverpool, like obviously in the northwest of England, I'm sure it's as tribal as ever, but do you think football support around the world is changing? Would you agree that Liverpool City, say in America or Asia, is a bigger global game now?
Yeah, it might be slightly more attractive, but I'm pretty sure I've seen adverts all week that Liverpool-Manchester United is the biggest watched game in the world. I think maybe a little bit for the purists, Liverpool, Manchester City would be the one. But I think there's not just rivalry with Liverpool, Manchester United. Unfortunately, there's also hatred, isn't there?
Mm.
And there's nearly always something happening in and around the game, which is really, really strange, because when you think about going back to the 80s, I think we had three Irish players, and Man United would have had at least three Irish players in their side as well. But it was always ever been thus. And I think if you said to most Liverpool supporters, who's the team you really want to beat? I still believe they would say Manchester United. I mean, it would obviously be, at the moment, would be City for me, because it probably meant you'd be top of the league and winning it. But I don't think it's changed dramatically enough yet to have actually changed people's thoughts about it.
5306, guys, I don't know where you're getting your stats from, but according to SAS from Sky Sports last week, even with the emergence of City, Man U v Liverpool is still the most watched game in club football throughout the world, says John Kilkenny. Well, John, I did give the stats that 62% of Irish people, according to a survey in the Irish Times last year, were Man U or Liverpool fans. I still think the biggest supported club. So I do think things have the ability to change. I think things can change. Another text in here, sad to hear about Mick, despite two positive results for Stephen Kenny in 2-0 games. Personally, I'd have Mick back at the helm of the national team.
Need to start
in
that
a heartbeat.
Bloody hell, how do you do it? Half an hour, is it? Half an hour.
We're talking about Man U Liverpool here. We'll talk about that when we have a quiet day. My 6-year-old is a Newcastle mad fan the last 2 years, loves St. Maximin, also Shamrock Rovers season ticket holder, says Joe in Carlow. You can do both. You can support the League of Ireland, you can also support English clubs.
Absolutely.
Mo Salah, Mark, this contract interview, he's got a contract till the summer of 2023. If he scores tomorrow, it's 10 games in a row. He's already set a record as an Anfield legend. Is this a negotiation process in public? Is that all it is?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not quite sure where would he go.
That's
would
it.
Would he go to PSG? Would he want to go to PSG? Unless he was free as well, he wouldn't go to Barcelona or Madrid. I think it's slowly kind of happening, but very, very slowly. And in the meantime, like any agent, you would just obviously keep reminding people that he's, when his contract's up. I think has he got 20 months or so left?
Summer 2023, yeah.
Yeah, so not a great problem, but I mean, how old will he be then, John? Do you know?
Would he be third?
He's three. He'll be 31. I think that's it. He's June 1992. So yeah, he'd be 31 that summer. I think. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I think he'll get his new contract. Whether he gets to become the best paid player in the world, I wouldn't have thought so. Somehow, I don't think he'll be topping Ronaldo and Messi and Mbappe and all those kind of guys. But he will be obviously get a serious pay rise, and he deserves it. And you know, Liverpool aren't daft. I mean, if they lost him and if he just decided to walk away, it's an awful lot of player and it's an awful lot of money that you've lost. So, look, I'm pretty sure they'll come to some kind of agreement. We've had this before with Liverpool a few times, haven't we? I think Henderson was the last one, the scary one, apparently. And then the next thing is he'd signed. So Van Dijk signed. So Alisson signed a new contract. So they're not daft, these fellas. And I think, you know, I've said this to you a few times, one of the good things about the football club is that the owners, you know, have a sports franchise in America, and they understand all these things, the negotiation process. You understand players get injured, you understand players lose form no matter what sport they play. And so, and I think generally Liverpool have done most of their signings in terms of improving contracts on a very quiet basis. So I'm guessing that the Egyptian agent for Mo Salah is on a regular basis telling everybody that his contract's up.
We have a Liverpool back five, which we know. We know the front three are absolutely firing, averaging over three goals a game away from home, Mark. Mm. United won clean sheet in the last 20 games, but we do know they have such attacking talent as well. How do you see it working out tactically? Like maybe the Liverpool midfield is something that is not completely set in stone at the moment, but how do you see it tactically tomorrow?
Well, Fabinho plays tomorrow. I think he got it wrong for once the other day with playing Keita against Atletico Madrid. I was at the game, and you know, basically down Liverpool's right, because obviously Salah basically stays up then, doesn't have to do too much tracking back, although he does a little bit. But very cleverly, Simeone had two players going up against Trent Alexander-Arnold, because Keita was so narrow on the right of a three in midfield that he was hardly ever there. And that was a real problem for Liverpool. They got all sorts of problems down that side. So Naby Keita will play. Would he play Milner after playing the other night? That's probably the biggest question. But then if he doesn't, who does he play? I don't know. Is Thiago fit?
I don't think so.
No, he's not.
I'm not sure that he
Curtis
is.
Curtis Jones is coming back, but Thiago isn't.
Well, he might be tempted to play Curtis Jones, who's done actually really well so far. I think he just had a little knock. I think he could have played, couldn't he, in an emergency on Tuesday. So he might go with him, I think. But Henderson, obviously, Fabinho back in this game is a no-brainer completely.
Shane, how do you see it tactically? How can United get some purchase against Liverpool? Because you'd have to think with the gaps between their defence and the attacking players that have obviously been there the last few weeks, how can they get a shape that can cause Liverpool problems?
Oh, that's what I'm saying. I was just saying it before the break, John. I really don't know. I don't know what the solution is with Pogba. Like, as I say, I would have put the vast majority of the blame of the Leicester defeat at his feet.
Is it McFred tomorrow, Shane? Is it McFred that they play as holders?
Jesus, did you see them the other... Like, you look at them then the other night against Atalanta, and, you know, Pogba's introduction was the reason, well, one of the chief reasons why the game turned around. Like, they just looked... They just didn't... They looked like they couldn't work together. They really, really did. I don't know. It's a really, really, really tough one for him. I would be surprised. I think you could be right with the McFred, as you phrased it yourself. He does tend to be quite conservative against the other big sides, doesn't he?
Counter-attack.
And I'm not 100% sure whether that means Pogba being left out of the side or Pogba being pushed back out to that tucked in winger position possibly again. I wouldn't be surprised to see that rear its head again tomorrow, that maybe it's him on the left and Greenwood on the right, either side of Fernandes, and that Rashford and Sancho then both miss out, or maybe Greenwood misses out. That might be the best option. That might be the way of trying to get the pluses of your Pogba into your side without all the negatives that come with it as well.
It's the interesting one about there's obviously a lot of debate. I saw Cristiano Ronaldo had to sort of I suppose, hit back, I suppose, or respond to some criticism of his approach, the point that, like, he's not the most aggressive presser in the Premier League. In fact, like, he's bottom of the entire charts. And it's probably an interesting one for a game like this. If you're talking about Manchester United being sort of strong on the counter, but yet you're talking about a situation, as Shane sort of suggests there, where to fit in Pogba and or as part of that little bit of a jigsaw, you have to leave out Greenwood in one scenario, but you would have thought that they're going to need that real attacking pace for this type of game, and that's obviously the
Fred is an injury doubt. Bruno Fernandes and Fred are injury doubts.
The decision could be taken out of their hands if Fred doesn't make it, I guess. But I think that's part of the dilemma, and it's the Ronaldo question that people are going to keep coming back to. I mean, he delivers, and he delivers with the goals, but clearly he presents the odd issue tactically for games where in the past Manchester United have worked quite well by having their central striker being more of a speedster. That's part of the issue they're going to face, I think, but it is going to be an interesting one.
Harry Maguire is probably not at his peak at the moment as well, Mark, because obviously he's coming back from an injury.
Although obviously scored the goal in the second half, which took extremely well, although the lad came off him for one of Atalanta's goals. He's such a big unit, John, that all the training in the world, he needs to play. And I think he only really gets his fitness from playing in the games. No matter what you do in training, it's never, ever, ever the same. You can't reenact what happens on the football pitch. So he isn't, but he's still a very, very good player. He hasn't got a turn of speed, as we know. I just think this is going to be really, really tight because, say with Manchester United, they can't really afford to lose here. So they can't go gung-ho against Liverpool and have an open game, because I would have thought if you did, Salah's going to get one or two. Liverpool have got, is it three goals every away game?
Yeah.
Is that the stat I think that I've been reading? So their confidence will be high. I just think we're in for the classic little bit dour, little bit scrappy, sort of 1-1 scenario for me. And of course, also in this game, more often than not, the referee becomes the main protagonist, because so many things happen and there's so many times that we go to VAR, etc., for all sorts of different decisions.
Do you play Pogba, Mark, or where do you play him?
No, I wouldn't play him. I wouldn't play him because, as a manager, he would drive me absolutely mad, because he's got unbelievable ability, but it's like heads and tails, John. If it's heads, it can be outstanding. If it's tails, he looks like he's totally disinterested. And no, I would not play him at all. And I would be one of those, if he wants to go in January, I would let him go, because we just have the same conversations about this fella every time. Fantastic on his day, but you know what? He's only ever fantastic when he plays for France. I don't think he's ever been really fantastic in a long spell for Manchester United. And with all the ability he's got, the size of him, his shape and the pace and the strength, he should be their best player nearly every single week.
Yeah, interesting on Paul Pogba. Just in terms of Liverpool, Mark, obviously we know you're coming from the Liverpool angle. How many Man United players would get, I know Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher did their combined 11s during the week. How many Man United players would get in that Liverpool team at the moment?
Oh, crikey. I'm thinking straight away, none. Back four? No. Goalkeeper, no.
Maguire not getting that centre half, no?
Who?
Maguire, you wouldn't put in the Liverpool team.
No, you know what? I'll tell you something. No, because Matip's quicker, which I think is important the way that Liverpool play. And when Matip plays with the big boy, Van Dijk, he's a different player, John. He comes out into midfield with the ball and he creates all sorts of problems for the opposition. I'm not sure he's going to do that tomorrow, because he's probably just going to have to stick in his armchair with Van Dijk, make sure nothing happens. But no, I wouldn't. I would rather, Maguire's strong and all those kind of things, but I would rather have pace, because what pace gives you is a chance to recover if you make a mistake.
Bruno Fernandes, Ronaldo, Mason Greenwood, would you have any of those in your team?
No, I just think the front three for Liverpool, and we can chuck Jota and make it four on occasions. I think as a unit, I don't see a better front three in world football. I've said that to you for like 3 or 4 years now. They're just, you know, they just they all just work together. I mean, we know about the form of Salah and everything, but the other two give you lots of different things. No, I wouldn't. And you know, and another reason, and I get the Greenwoods and I get all those kind of things with those players you chucked at me. But tell you what, John, what you get with these lads as well, you get week in, game in, game out, just eight and a half, sometimes nine and a half out of 10 from all three. And occasionally you look at Firmino, you're not kind of sure, well, what exactly did he do? But he's the glue for these other two, for Mane and Salah. And as I say, I don't, and I know I'm being slightly biased, but no, I mean, all those Man United players you've thrown at me, you've got a really, really good argument. But Liverpool are far more consistent, and that's why Manchester United are where they are, and at the moment will not win the Premier League.
But you think the fixture and the drama and the fixture and the history and all that makes it a more tight game based on what you're saying? Because, like, if you're just based on the facts there, as you've outlined, Liverpool should be winning this comfortably tomorrow.
Yeah, they should be. But no, the fixture, everything about it, the fear of losing, all those kind of things and everything. Yeah, it's... I mean, I can't remember last week, but basically, I can't remember the last time there was a real kind of rock and roll Manchester United Liverpool game in the Premier League. I think there was a 3-2, was there, in the FA Cup not too long ago. But in the Premier League, now it's just like we cannot lose. And certainly for me tomorrow, Manchester United will be, we cannot lose this game.
Were you involved in any amazing games in the 80s, Liverpool United, Mark?
No.
It's the same back then.
Well, listen, they were only amazing because after 20 minutes, the referee would suggest that we throw the ball back on now because it hadn't been on for the first 20. And it was just like a kicking fest. I mean, I remember the worst news ever for me before a game when Joe Fagan came. He said, we're going to play in midfield tomorrow because it looks like it might be a little bit light. And I'm thinking, right, OK, fine. And then I'm looking and thinking, oh, Brian Robertson, Norman Whiteside, it'll be about Remy Moses. And I thought, all right. And I could understand why, because it was just mad. I mean, no one was ever sent off in that first 20 minutes, but literally the ref would say, right, gentlemen, shall we throw the ball on now and start again, as I said to you before. And it was bonkers. And I mean, you know, we all knew each other so well, but it was just a given that you basically just kick HHSH1T out of each other for the first 20 minutes. And I even wasn't really good at that. But I had a certain Mr. Souness alongside me, which was great.
Mark Lawrenson, call us for your verdict tomorrow. 1-1.
Draw 1-1.
Okay, thanks, Mark.
Pleasure.
Mark Lawrenson there on OTB Football Saturday. Dan and Shane are still going to continue with us until 5. We're going to talk about last night's FAI Cup semi-finals and the women's defeat to Sweden. Just give you the latest scores in the Premier League. Chelsea 7, Norwich 0, a full-time score. Crystal Palace 1, Newcastle 1 is the latest. Everton 2, Watford 1. So Everton have gone in front at Goodison Park. Tom Davies got the first goal and Richarlison has got the second for Rafa Benitez's team. Leeds 0, Wolves 1 is the latest score. Southampton 2, Burnley 2 and Brighton and Manchester City kick off at 5:30. In the Championship, Mick McCarthy sacked after that defeat for Cardiff 2-0 at home to Middlesbrough today. Latest scores, Birmingham 1, Swansea 0. It is Blackburn Rovers 2, Reading 0. It is Blackpool 2, Preston 0. It is Bournemouth, who are flying high, 3, Huddersfield 0. Coventry lead Derby by a goal to 0. It is Luton 1, Hull 0. It is Millwall 2, Stoke 1. It is Peterborough 1, QPR 1. And it is West Brom 2, Bristol City 0. That match at half-time at the moment in Scotland. Celtic leads St Johnstone by a goal to nil in the Premiership. Aberdeen 1, Hibs 0. Dundee United 1, Motherwell 0. At the moment, it's Hearts 1, Dundee 0. And Ross County 2, Livingston 2. Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk is back after this.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, Scottish Premiership and much more live on Sky Sports.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5. You can text us 53106, tweet us at Off the Ball. We're streaming the conversation as well. You can watch us on the Off the Ball digital and social channels for Periscope on Twitter, at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook, and on the OTB Sports app. Search OTB Sports in your app store now to download it if you have not already. We're joined by the football correspondent of the Irish Independent, Dan McDonnell, and the UEFA Pro Licence coach, Shane Keegan, to talk about the beautiful game. Teams are in for Brighton against Manchester City with Sanchez in goal for Brighton. We have Veltman, Dunk, Byrne and Ciccarella across the back. So Shane Duffy's on the bench for Brighton. And then we have Gross, Moder, Lallana and March. And then with Mopay and Trossard up front for Brighton. And for Manchester City with Connolly on the bench as well for Brighton. Manchester City 4-3-3, Ederson in goal. Walker, Diaz, Laporte and Cancelo. Gundogan captains aside, Rodri and Bernardo Silva. And then Gabriel Jesus, Jack Grealish and Phil Foden, who played so well. Foden the other night in Bruges. Kevin De Bruyne is on the bench. Text in here, we're kind of asking listeners about whether there's the nature of support has changed ahead of Man U Liverpool tomorrow, which is the biggest game for Irish supporters of the Premier League. 53106. Hi, John from Bantry here. I've had 6 offspring, oldest 16, youngest twins 3. No Reds in sight. They've all signed the forms. We have a deal. 6 Everton Royal Blue fans created. Think I'll double the Bantry Everton fan base. We got to start somewhere. Can't always follow the Pied Piper of the Reds. I'd rather walk alone, says John, who's questions is that independent thinking. Thank you for your text. My husband is a devoted Forest supporter, has been since he was 7. I was brought up as a Liverpool fan. Needless to say, our kids are all Liverpool supporters. It's rare to find any teenagers supporting the Championship club now. Quite a few of my son's friends follow players rather than clubs, says Mim in Cork. And started my 3 boys into Waterford since they were 6 now, 11, 10 and 8. The buzz of going to Dalymount last night, the concentration for the full 90 plus minutes from them was intense. What's more, we always end up bringing a couple of their school buddies to the home games, building a connection to our local club. Football is real to them now, not a TV programme. Still, they all support Liverpool and Chelsea, but our team and our league is only 5 miles away. Our players are real. They could even meet them in town if only more people realise you can have both, says Laurie in South Kilkenny. Fair play for your text on 53106. Matches with fans back last night, Dan, you were at Patrick.
Yeah, 100% fans. That's it, 100% fan capacity. And Laurie there would have experienced it at Dalymount last night, where there was that game sold out in ridiculously short amount of time. It's obviously just a shame that half of Dalymount is basically, you know, committed now, you know, wouldn't pass sort of health and safety. So they could have got a lot more people into that game. But Pats and Dock, where I was, yeah, the max 5,000 was there. It was great. Like, it was a good game. Sometimes, you know, intensity and significance of a game and the crowd can mask, you know, you can make it enjoyable, but then nerves and factor, other things become a factor in the game. But actually, I just thought the game itself was quite enjoyable. There was some errors made, but there was some good goals. I mean, for some Pats, it was a really big night for them to overcome this Dundalk side. A really experienced still Dundalk side who've won stuff, and Shane would have worked with them, and he would know, you know, when you have that strong 11 out last night, as Dundalk did. Okay, missing Patrick McElhenney, but still very close to their strongest team. They're still a formidable side. They shouldn't be where they are. And for Pats to overcome it, it was big, and there was a great sort of vibe in the stadium at full time, and which, you know, you missed the 2 sets of fans and just that real tightness to the pitch. And it was as, you know, as good a night as I've probably experienced, I think, at Richmond Park in some time. It always helps when there's good goals and new talent. And I think, you know, Dara Burns was probably the story last night. You know, 19-year-old right winger, interesting backstory in the sense that he's got a dad from Belfast, his mother's from Dublin, so even though he's a Dub, but I think the family live in Meath, he would have gone up and played for Northern Ireland when he was younger. A couple of years back, he played for both the Republic of Ireland and the Northern Ireland in the space of 2 weeks. Yeah, and like a Dub accent playing for Northern Ireland. People can, there's been a couple of cases in the past where people have switched back, but I struggle to think of any examples really of someone can correct me on sort of, you know, someone from the south, as in not just even a border county, but sort of from further down, it would have gone the Northern Irish route. But it just so happens Dara Burns is pretty good, and I think he's following his heart now. He's in the process of switching allegiance to play for the Republic, and I mean, he's good. You hate the hype, but it's not. I mean, Jim Crawford wants to bring him into the 21 squad, and there's actually a shortage of attacking wingers coming through. It's something Stephen Kenny has spoken about. So he's got a lot of strength and up and work to do, but he is a talented player. And I don't know if people can see his third goal last night. You know, he raced through on goal under pressure. You know, to put your team into the Aviva. You know, 5 minutes to go, and he does the little cheeky chip over the keeper, sort of a Messi style finish or something, and you're thinking he's 19. He's got a chance of being a good player. I don't know if you've seen much of him, Shane, but he rose to the occasion
last night. Before you go to Shane, Watford have scored. Watford 3, Everton 2 now, Goodison Park. Josh King with the second of the game, putting the Hornets in front. Ranieri's Watford.
Oh, Ranieri's. Well, I actually should say as well, Michael Obafemi has scored for Swansea against Birmingham, the Championship. That's his first goal, I think, for Swansea. And McLean has scored in League One. But yeah, we could be seeing Dara Burns scoring on a Saturday in the future, maybe in England, Shane. He looks to have a chance.
In England or in Scotland, I think, is nearly more so the talk, is it?
What's the talk?
I think there might be a bit of interest in that direction. So there might, but he's breaking stories
on a Saturday, Shane. It's very good. Yeah.
He was outstanding last night. He really, I mean, the only question last night was whether the assist for the second goal or the finish for the third was the better, with the higher piece of quality. He's top notch, and look, just I suppose as a set of results. Like, is it right that have these two never met in an FAI Cup final?
I couldn't believe that. I actually couldn't believe
that's
that.
Amazing.
So it's Bowes and St Pat's FAI Cup final. It's the first, again, and for a league that sometimes can appear quite Dublin dominated, it's the first all Dublin final in 21 years, which is back to 2000. And apparently St Patrick's Athletic and Bowes have never met in an FAI Cup final, which I think would surprise a lot of people.
It would surprise me.
Because it sounds like the type of game you think would have been an FAI Cup final, you know?
Back in the day.
Yeah.
It's amazing, really, but I suppose we've had the exact opposite for the last few years, where you knew before the season started who the two teams in the final were going to be. So there's a real, real brilliant freshness to it. And while there had been some very, very good crowds in previous years for FA Cup finals because you had the two most high-quality teams in it, I think, again, this one should be a real, real kind of attraction for fans, obviously, of both clubs, but I think massively so for neutrals as well because of the freshness of the game. And there's just so many stories, I suppose, in individual players and management situations and everything between both sides, that it's very, very easy to hype this one up and get people excited about it. You really would hope that the FAI absolutely go all out.
They have to. They have everything. Like Bowes had the games in the Aviva during the summer, and listen, we talk on this show here, and you're trying to make the sort of the League of Ireland stuff accessible to people who wouldn't necessarily be following it. Like, you're going to have that Bowes St Pat's game, you're going to have some really exciting players, like you know, you talk about Dawson Devoy and Ross Tierney and, you know, Andy Lyons around the under-21 squad, Dara Burns, who's going to be in there. We'll see if some of the other younger lads at Pat's, who's going to be, you know, they maybe might have a small bit more to go, but you know, Georgie Kelly with his goals.
Yeah, I was going to say. Georgie's not as young, but.
Yeah, 24, you know, James Talbot, you know, good, like Yaros, the Liverpool goalkeeper. Like, it's actually a young, like, you're talking about a player there. Have we named anyone there under, you know, over the age of 25, you know? And I think that's got to be a selling point, that you are actually seeing young, positive. And I have to say, like, two teams who are probably. Actually, Pats can be quite clever into how they play it tactically, but they're two quite attacking sides generally. And in fact, Bowes and Pats had a couple of mad games earlier in this season, so I think it could be pretty good. And I actually do think the FAI really should be pushing this one. Sometimes you think you would need the non-Dublin angle, because sometimes you go outside Dublin and like almost the parish response comes, you know, people latch onto it like they might to the local GAA team. And it's a bit different in Dublin, where you don't, you know, it's a slightly different identity that might exist around clubs. But I think the players is how you have to sell it, and I think that game should be sold very well, and there's no excuse for aiming low with how you approach it, in my opinion.
20 goals this season for Georgie Kelly.
Just on the promotion, again, just on the general topic of it, I know you passed a couple of comments on it yourself yesterday on social media. So what was the thinking, or what was the explanation behind them going with the game they went with on RT last night?
I don't know. I mean, listen, I do feel like there's been a lot of RTE grief, and some of it warranted, I have to say, you know, ignoring certain European games in the summer. I'm not sure what the thinking was with this one. I'm not aware of it. I know they've been to Pats a while in recent weeks, and I think, I'm not suggesting in this instance, but I think they've possibly had some issues at certain grounds with even doing the on-pitch stuff around sort of in front of spectators and stuff, and would it be a bit easier to manage that in Daly Mount? Maybe I'm just speculating there, but I don't know. It was a cracking game last night. I think the wrong one was shown, but I do think as well, I've heard some positive reports about the Bowes Waterford. There was an element of drama to it, but I don't think it was the same quality of game. I think people would have enjoyed Pats Dundalk for sure.
53106 from Roscommon originally. Now I live in Dublin. We're asking about support here. I support Shelburne, that's my local club. I don't see why I can't follow both a local and a Premier League team as well, says one of our texters on 53106. Just let you know with the Premier League scores as the matches approach full time. Crystal Palace have scored, subject to VAR, but they've just scored 2-1. And as Christian Benteke get his second of the game, yeah, it is subject to VAR, but at the moment, Crystal Palace 2, Newcastle 1. Callum Wilson got the Newcastle goal, so we'll see if that stands, that goal. Everton 2, Watford 4. Watford have scored again, so it looks like they're going to get a win with Josh King getting his hat-trick at Goodison Park. So defeat for Everton on the cards. Leeds 0, Wolves 1. This is a bad run for the moment for Leeds. Southampton 2, Burnley 2. This game is taking place at St Mary's. Nathan Collins started the game for Burnley. Maxwell has scored a couple for them, with Livermanto and Broja for the second week in a row. Broja scoring for the Saints at St Mary's.
Goal is chalked off.
Well, that's it. See, we bring it to you first. We always say it's subject to VAR. As Crystal Palace 1, Newcastle 1 is the correct score now in the Premier League. The women's team, it's a tricky one for them, I think, because they really tried hard against Sweden. They were resolute in defence, but they lost the game, and now Tuesday's the one they need to win. So you'd have to hope that Vera Pauw can motivate them again to go again for this game in Helsinki.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like, I think people are gaining a lot more awareness of this side, and I was touching on this in the sort of newsletter I do, that like, I think you almost feel like you need to watch more games and have more of a knowledge of the team before you really got to get stuck into the analysis of it. Because I was sort of listening to Vera Pauw, I think it was on this station actually, after the game on Thursday, and speaking about how, well, if they'd been more attacking in the game and been a bit more positive, they could have lost 7-0 or 8-0, which it was sort of a bit of a strange comment, I thought, you know, because I don't know, maybe, like, I know that Sweden are exceptionally good, but you see that the Irish team, like, some of them are playing at a pretty good level. I know Katie McCabe is the exceptional one, but Denise O'Sullivan is a terrific player. Then you see a couple of others are sort of sprinkled around at, you know, the Women's Super League, and I know a couple are in the Championship level.
Maybe the feeling is, though, this is the second ranked team in the world.
I'm not saying that
you open up.
I just thought it was like 7-8-0 is like strong, you know what I mean, in the sense of do they need to be that disciplined and that sort of conservative in those games? Because it did appear in the second half, when they applied some pressure, Sweden didn't look 100% comfortable at times. But I don't know, like, you saw in the last campaign that they were capable of, like, stirring displays in defeat to better sides, and yet when it came to the crunch, the reason they didn't qualify, didn't get to the playoff, is because they weren't good enough winning games they should win. Now, I know Finland isn't one of those games. They're ranked higher than Ireland, I think, so they're key games, but I think that feels like the key issue across the group is that, are they going to be as efficient when they have to win, as opposed to being organised and sturdy where they're
expected
to lose.
Sounds like Stephen Kenny's team.
Well, I mean, there's parallels with, like, goal scoring being an issue, but obviously you know, there seems to be ultra conservatism to a degree the other night, although there was decent passages in the game. But it does feel like the Finland games are going to be the key ones for them.
A final word on this, Shane Keegan?
Yeah, look, I suppose, again, one of the comments that you'd have to pass on it is just how much talk there was around the game. It really, really was very, very, very much mainstream. So it was, and it's brilliant to see that battle is almost no longer a battle. So it is. I think everybody was well aware of the game. Everybody was up for the game. I'd like to know what the kind of viewing figures around it were. I'd say they were reasonably impressive. The performance, yeah, look, I can definitely see where Vera Pauw is coming from there. I would have you know, I would have went up to Dundalk with Wexford youth sides, where you very much set out to play in the manner that she did, and you might lose 1-0 narrowly, and then you're getting grief about not having a bit more of a go at it. So I do understand where she's coming from, absolutely, in that sense. Maybe it's, you know, you can always make the argument that there was a bit more room for balance in terms of a little bit more of an attacking edge. But I also think she would have had one eye on Tuesday night. And she's thinking about momentum. She's thinking, okay, you come away with a 1-0 defeat to Sweden. Everybody's in, you know, nobody's going to take a defeat lying down, but that's a pretty good result. And now momentum is positive, and now there's a real self-belief heading into the Tuesday game. Whereas if you're hammered, it's a very different feeling around the camp.
Shane, thanks so much.
Cheers, Jenny.
And Dan, thank you.
Thank you, John.
Shane. 5-2 now. Watford lead Everton in the Premier League as these games approach full time. Crystal Palace 1, Newcastle 1, Leeds 0, Wolves 1, and Southampton 2, Burnley 2. Earlier on, Chelsea beat Norwich by 7-0. In the Championship, Mick McCarthy sacked after Cardiff's 2-0 defeat at home to Middlesbrough. Birmingham 2, Swansea 1 as the latest score. Blackburn 2, Reading 0, Blackpool 2, Preston 0. It's finished. Bournemouth 3, Huddersfield 0. Latest, Coventry 1, Derby 1, latest Luton 1, Hull 0. It's Millwall 2, Stoke 1. It's Peterborough 2, QPR 1. It's West Brom 3, Bristol City 0. And in Scotland, Celtic beat St Johnstone, or well, they're going to beat them now, 5 minutes into stoppage time, 2-0. They lead in the Scottish Premiership. Celtic 2, St Johnstone 0. Just to let you know, Liverpool fans, you won't want to miss our latest Cadbury FC roadshow. We're going behind the scenes at Anfield with legendary striker Robbie Fowler. We're also joined by Liverpool skipper and Irish international Lee Fahey and the former Liverpool midfielder and physio Richie Partridge. All with thanks to Cadbury FC and their club partnerships, granting you behind-the-scenes access at the Premier League's biggest clubs, coming soon to OTB's social channels. We've got to leave it there. Don't forget we're back on Off the Ball from 1 until 7 tomorrow. The big news today, that proposal be failing to pass GA Congress, so a regular championship next year in football. We're going to showcase two live and exclusive Premier League commentary games on Off the Ball here on News Talk tomorrow. First up, West Ham United against Tottenham Hotspur. Jessica Farry and Keith Tracy will call that one. Then it's the big one. Manchester United versus Liverpool. Joe Molloy and Brian Kerr are our commentary team for the match at Old Trafford. That's all on FM here on News Talk from 1. There's also the Sunday paper review with Vincent Hogan and Dion Fanning across the OTB social and digital channels from 11:30. So to be sure to join us tomorrow for some great commentaries and conversation. If you missed the Sonny Bill Williams interview or our Saturday panel reviewing that vote from Congress with Michael Verney and Mick O'Keefe, or any of OTB Football Saturday with Mark Lawrence and Dan McDonald and Shane Keegan, you can find the podcasts on the OTB Sports app. Thanks for listening to us today. Speak soon. Bye-bye.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, Scottish Premiership and much more. Live on Sky Sports.